Hi, this is Rachel from Artist Soar. Stephanie, Julie, and I are taking some time off this holiday season to be with our families. Please enjoy listening to this best of episode.
Hello and welcome to Artist Soar. This is a podcast for artists by three artists. We discuss all aspects of being artists, the good, the bad, and the ugly. The goal of each podcast is to provide solutions so artists can focus on their creativity and soar above. I'm Rachel Harshenko.
Jules McCullough.
Stephanie Weaver.
Hi, and welcome back, guys. We have a special edition today and a special guest because we're all gearing up and getting ready to set our goals and get our year kind of set out. Julie, especially, and Stephanie, they're all about setting attainable goals and everything. And our special guest today is going to tell us how she does set some goals out and what she did and some great resources that you guys will be able to take advantage of. And Jules is going to do the introduction.
Yes. So we are so excited to have Kat Coquelette on with us today. I met her back in France in 2021. Yes, because we're in 2022. I forgot what year we were in. Oh my gosh. 2021. And her and Logan Elliott, who we had on last month, were holding a retreat there in France. And I had an amazing time learning and just being a sponge and absorbing so much information that Kat and Logan are both always willing to provide to their students and their audience. And so we are so happy to have Kat here. So Kat, I'll let you do a little bit more introduction of where your travels are taking you these days, because I think most people know you're a digital nomad, and a little bit more about your background.
Yeah, thank you for the intro, Jules. Jules mentioned, we met when I was co-hosting a watercolor plus entrepreneur retreat in France last year. And then Jules also came to the retreat I hosted this year, which was in Spain. So yeah, it's been a lot of fun. So yeah, I live as a digital nomad, which means I travel around the world 24/7. I don't really have a home base anywhere. I bounce from country to country pretty much on a whim. So yeah, I spent most of my time in Southeast Asia between Thailand and Bali. In the summers, I usually bounce around Europe. And this time of year, it's Christmas time. So I'm back in Kansas visiting family. This is where I grew up. But to actually explain what I do, I'm an artist and I earn a living through art licensing. So what that means is I create illustrations and patterns, and then I license those designs to big brands like Target, Anthropology, Home Goods, Urban Outfitters, and they turn my artwork into actual products that they sell to their customers. So anything from throw pillows and scarves to wallpaper, art prints, I mean, you name it. If it's a product, my artwork's probably on it through one of my partners somewhere in the world. So yeah, it's a pretty exciting gig for sure. And then I'm also a teacher. So I teach online classes to teach other creatives essentially how to do exactly what I'm doing. So I teach classes on art licensing, how to get involved with print on demand, which we'll talk about in a little bit. It's how I got started. And then I also teach creative classes. So how to draw on your iPad using Procreate, or how to paint with watercolor, how to create seamless patterns. You can upload designs through websites like Spoonflower and make fabric or wallpaper. So yeah, basically my classes are everything I wish I would have known when I was first getting started 8 or 9 years ago. So I'm like, okay, what did I not know then that would have made a massive difference at the beginning? And then I teach a class on that. So yeah, I've got about 20 classes and going.
Wow. Awesome. So just to jumpstart us a little bit here, what's your favorite thing, motif, I guess I would say, to draw? What's your favorite thing to draw?
Oh, definitely animals. But I was actually, Jules, I was so afraid of drawing animals when I first got started because I was like, oh, if I don't get the proportions right, they're going to look all weird, or, you know, and so I started by drawing bugs and insects, or, you know, amphibians or turtles. So I was drawing like the safe ones first, where if you mess up, you know, what a honeybee looks like, no one's really going to care, right? You can have some more creative freedom with it. So I was like, oh, I can't do a dog or a cat because if I screw it up, it's just going to look like a monster. So I avoided that for years, but now I'm like, you know what? I can embrace failure. And so now it's, yeah, I do a lot of animals in my portfolio. In terms of licensing, animals are pretty much a surefire in terms of getting picked up for sales. They're always relevant. They're always on trend, especially animals that people love, like cats and dogs, pets. Then certain animals kind of like they roll with trends, like alpacas were really on trend for a few years, elephants, things like that. Yeah.
Yep. Very cool. Mm-hmm. I should have guessed animals or cats.
Or cats, yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm looking at your website, which we'll have in show notes and everything. And it's just beautiful. I love all the colors that you use. And your Urban Outfitters with the leopard and all your florals. Everything looks so amazing and bright and colorful.
Thank you. Yeah, I feel like color is a pretty big keystone of my brand. It's a lot of vibrant color palettes. And then, of course, keen into, you know, on trend color palettes. So if you look at all of the illustrations that I've done this last year, which I just compiled in my year in review that I put together every year, I was uploading all my new artwork that I've done in all of 2022. And almost everything has this kind of like 60s retro color palette, because a lot of my licensors were requesting like these mod retro palettes, because that's been, you know, pretty on trend the last year or two.
Yeah. I did notice that in your year-end review, that color palette was a little bit more muted than what I'm used to seeing from you.
Yeah, yeah.
And I like that you put your year-end review on your website. I like that you have a lot of your things in there. I just, you know, a lot of people do the end review just for themselves. And I like that you put it up there and you're like, well, here's what I've done, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's really, really fulfilling to see, the last 12 months all compiled into this one blog post. I did a word count on it and it was about 10,000 words. So I was like, dang, I try to make it short and brief every year, but it has a habit of just overflowing. It's the places I've traveled. It's where I've lived throughout the year. It's new partnerships and licensing deals. It's new classes. Blog posts, and just pretty much everything I've been doing with my brand and personal life. So it really fills up.
Wow.
Yeah. That'll make a great book collection someday when you take all those.
Oh, that's a great idea.
I love that.
Yeah. You could put all of this in a book. I'm reading through as we're talking too, because it's just beautiful. Really well done.
Thank you. I'll send you a link so you can add it to the show notes.
Okay. Awesome. Yeah. That would be perfect. So, you know, you went from being a graphic designer, I think that's correct. And you went out on your own, just making the story short a little bit. And what was the number one thing you wish you would have known when you started freelancing on your own?
Oh, easily the number one thing that would have accelerated my success tenfold is to not let myself, like not hold myself back because of limiting beliefs or imposter syndrome. There's a lot of things I didn't do early on in my business because I didn't think I was good enough or ready for it. Like I mentioned, you know, even something as simple as incorporating animals into my portfolio. I wish I would have done that sooner. I wish I would have gotten over that limiting belief of like, oh, I'm not that good of an artist. I can't draw realistic cats or whatever it is. Turns out you don't need to do realistic cats. You can always infuse your own unique artistic voice and style. But yeah, I was pretty timid when I was first getting started. And I didn't really know that much about business. And so here I was, I just left my job to be an entrepreneur and self-employed. So I had a lot of doubts and worries if I would be good enough for it. And so, I look at what I do now and it's like, oh, if someone approaches me with a project and it's within the realm of something that I'm interested or a licensing deal that maybe takes me a little bit out of my comfort zone, but I think it could be a really cool project. I say yes to it now. But when I first got started, I was much more hesitant about taking risks and trying new things. So that was a big one for me.
Yeah.
I kind of want to go back just a little bit more because I don't know your full history. So you mentioned that you had a previous job. What's your background before you got into this? All these 8-9 years of this experience that's led you to this. What happened before?
Yeah, for sure. I'll give you the Cliff's Notes version. So I went to school and I double majored in graphic design and illustration. I went to the University of Kansas. Kansas is where I grew up. And yeah, I left when I graduated from college with that double major. I immediately got a job at a design agency in Kansas City, Willoughby Design. There, it's a really great firm. And I worked there for about 4 years doing pretty much everything. It was a small firm. So the benefit of being a designer there is you got to dip your toe into a lot of different types of water. I got to do logos, design websites, go on photo shoots, and really do a lot of different facets of everything that goes in, into being a branding agency. And, you know, I really loved that job. I loved my coworkers. It was a really good opportunity to grow. I feel like that first year or even maybe 6 months of that job, it's just, you know, you're just thrown into it, into the workforce. And I learned more in those first 6 months than I think I did in all of college. But, you know, it's kind of that pacing, right, of going from a student to a professional. But what happened is I still loved painting with watercolors. And when you're working for a branding agency, there's every once in a while I would incorporate watercolors into a project, but, you know, not as much as I would have liked. Obviously, branding agencies aren't illustration agencies or watercolors. Right. So I'd come home from work and I would get out my watercolors every night and just paint, not to monetize it or to do anything with it, but just to have some sort of creative outlet that didn't involve looking at a screen. And before too long, I started taking pictures of my paintings just with my iPhone and uploading them to Instagram. And at that point, I had maybe a couple hundred followers. It was mostly friends and family. And when I started uploading my paintings to Instagram, my followers started growing pretty quickly. This was, you know, the glory days of Instagram, 2013, 2014. And so people started asking me and leaving comments if they could purchase originals or art prints. And it was people I didn't even know who they were. It was a really, you know, cool and weird feeling of like, oh my gosh, these strangers want to buy my artwork. And it had never really occurred to me that I could make money through my watercolor artwork before. I kind of thought like, oh, I'm a designer and that's my vocation. This is how I earn a living. But the idea of being an artist just never occurred to me. I just thought artist was synonymous with starving artists. So I never even considered pursuing that route. So people started asking me, like leaving comments on Instagram, if they could purchase an art print or an original. And that's when, the idea kind of formed of, hey, maybe this is something that I could earn a little bit of a side hustle income through. So I was doing all the research and looking at like how to price your originals, how to ship them, you know, the benefits of shipping flat versus rolling, just every little minutia of like setting up a website. How do you get e-commerce? Do you sell it on Etsy? Do you set it up on your own website? And I got really overwhelmed and I almost just gave up on the idea. I was like, okay, this is too complicated. I work 40 hours a week. I don't have time to do this.
Right.
But then I thought of this website where I purchased phone cases in the past and it's called Society 6. So I'm not sure if you're familiar, but it's a print-on-demand website. That's the business model, print-on-demand, which is an artist like me would upload a design. Let's say it's a watercolor sunflowers I painted. I'd scan it into my computer, upload it to Society 6, and enable it on whatever their products are. And they have a lot of products. They have everything from pillows and art prints to, you know, socks now, apparel, everything. And so I started uploading my paintings to that website and then letting my Instagram followers know, hey, this is actually for sale now through this website called Society 6. So you can buy it as an art print or a phone case, you know, it's your choice. And I was thinking at the time, like, okay, this will just be a fun project. Maybe I'll make a little bit of extra money. And what happened is that just completely blew up. I got in at a really great time with Society 6. Yeah. This was back in 2014. And within 6 months, I was earning more through Society 6 than I was at my full-time job as a designer at an agency.
Wow.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was incredible. It's hard to replicate that same success today, right? Because they're a really popular print-on-demand website. They're very saturated with content creators just like me. But new print-on-demand websites that follow that same model are popping up every day. So when new ones arise, I usually try to get involved with them from the ground up. And, you know, a lot of them fail, but some of them do grow and make it. So, yeah, that was definitely the first step of me realizing, oh, this could be something greater. And that's what led me to leaving that job and then embracing self-employment and seeing where this whole art career could take me.
Wow. And it's taken you all over the world.
That's amazing. All over the world.
That's amazing.
So I had a quick question. So, and it probably will lead into what you're going to be discussing, but so you leave your job, you're doing this full time, but then where was that shift to go, I'm going to travel, not have a home and still create and do what I'm doing?
Oh, Rachel, it was baby steps. It definitely wasn't this decision of like, I'm moving to Thailand. No. I remember my first, the day I put in my 2 weeks notice with that job, I also booked a ticket to Southeast Asia. I was going to spend, after as soon as I left that job, I was going to spend 6 weeks backpacking around Southeast Asia. So the day I put in my 2 weeks notice, I booked a flight to the Philippines, landing in the Philippines and then leaving out of Bangkok 6 weeks later. And I was like, great, I'm going to give myself 6 weeks to just embrace being a backpacker. It's something I'd always wanted to do, but never had the time or money to do it. So I left my job. And then in January, I went on this amazing trip. I, you know, got to go hiking in the Philippines. I ate, you know, a tarantula in Cambodia at a bus stop. Like it was, I was just like, I'm going to get out of my comfort zone, do all of these crazy things. And I had a wonderful time. I ate, you know, food I'd never had before. I went on these, I love hiking. So I went on these incredible hikes. I saw jungle. It was just everything I could have ever hoped for.
Yeah. Did you go by yourself?
One of my friends joined me for the first 2 weeks in the Philippines. And after that, I did 4 weeks solo. So it was a kind of, again, baby steps getting into it, starting my trip with a friend to kind of get comfortable with being over in Asia. And it was my first
time. How old were you, Kat?
No, this has been a begging question for me too.
I'm sorry. Okay.
I'm 35 now. And I think at the time I was like 27 or 28, something like that. Yeah.
Well, and I would also say like this past weekend, I met a lady, she came into the studio and if I had to guess what age, it would probably be late 50s, early 60s, because she was a professional artist in San Francisco in the 60s. And she was like a professional artist in New York from the 80s and 90s. Anyway, she's dropping everything, selling everything and moving to Paris. So age doesn't matter. It's just the adventure that you want to have. And so I'm loving the idea of the digital nomad and you guys taking that adventure and that initiative. It's just, I'm literally getting goosebumps.
Oh man. Yeah. I think that's a really good point too. It's not, you know, and it's not this all or nothing thing. You know, I did that 6 week trip and I was like, we'll just see how it goes. It's 6 weeks. We'll see how that works out. But then afterwards I came back to my apartment in Kansas City and I was like, why am I here right now? That was so exhilarating. That was such an incredible experience. And so I stayed in that apartment until my lease ended a few months later. And then instead of renewing my lease, I decided that I packed up all my belongings and put them in my brother's basement and filled up a suitcase. And I decided like I'd just be on the road for a little bit and see how it went. And for me, it wasn't like it was going to be this permanent thing. Like I can't believe I've been doing this for almost 7 years now. At the time, I was like, I need to get it out of my system. I need to travel for a little bit. You know, I've never been able to travel before to this capacity. And so suddenly having the freedom, I was like, okay, I'm going to get it out of my system. And then I'm going to be serious and like get another apartment in Kansas City and like run my business. And what happened is I went to Colorado first and I kind of bounced around Airbnbs there. And then I was like, you know what? I loved Asia. I'm just going to buy a ticket and go back to Thailand. And what happened is when I got back to Thailand, I became integrated with this community of other digital nomads. So it's other people doing the same thing I'm doing. I didn't meet any artists, but I met a lot of people that were copywriters or they had jobs back home, but they were able to work remotely or they were, you know, starting a marketing business. It was a lot of developers. So it was people just of all different scopes and professions. But the things that we all had in common was we were working from anywhere in the world that just had, you know, as long as we had Wi-Fi access, we can do our jobs anywhere. And everyone really prioritized the travel lifestyle. So when I went back to Thailand, I was thinking, okay, I'll just go back for a few months and then I'll come back to Kansas and be serious. And what happened is it was just like, okay, one more month. Oh, I'm going to go down to Bali. Everybody's going down to Bali. I'll go down to Bali. And then it was just, you know, and it just kind of like rolled from there. So yeah. And it's definitely an interesting lifestyle. But the thing is like, if there was any point where I didn't like that kind of, I mean, it's chaotic. There's a lot of change. It's hard to have productivity and routines when you're moving around a lot. So there's definitely a lot of challenges, but the best part is, if there was ever a point where I got sick of it or I was tired or I just wasn't as productive as I wanted to be, I could always just come home. So in terms of risks, it wasn't that big of a risk because I could always just come back and come back into my comfort zone if I ever wanted to. So knowing that I had that kind of safety net gave me permission to continue exploring and having these adventures.
Cool. Very cool.
And so that really did influence all your artwork from there on.
Yeah, Rachel, absolutely. So it's, I mean, a huge chunk of my portfolio. It's the it's kind of like a travel snapshot of where I've been around the world. After I spent some time in Indonesia, I painted monkeys and then they became a really strong seller in my portfolio. I did a trip down to Peru and I hiked the Inca Trail to Machu Picchu with my family. And I painted some alpacas after that trip. And that was right before that alpaca llama trend just skyrocketed. So I got in at a really good time for that. And those alpacas that I painted after my trip to Peru earned me a big chunk of my income for the next couple of years. So yeah, all over the world, you know, I take pictures as I'm, you know, visiting a new city or hiking in the jungle or doing whatever. And then I use those photos on my phone as reference photos for the paintings and illustrations that I create.
Wow. Okay. So this one's going to be a random question. Because when you're talking about hiking through the jungles, eating tarantulas, my mind is like going, snakes. So what do you do for like the safety precautions of being a female, you know, white female going to almost third world type countries, traveling through jungles, doing things that are definitely probably not the norm in Kansas?
Yeah, you know, I've been lucky. I haven't really had any major safety issues in the past. But you know, that was definitely a concern when I first left Kansas. I was just thinking, like, I don't know anything. I've never been to Southeast Asia before. What's it going to be like? What if I'm just I don't speak the language? I'm completely right out of my comfort zone. And I just had this whole list of unknowns that were just, you know, really terrifying me. But then what I realized is that the unknowns are always the scariest thing. But when you actually are out there and you're dealing with it, like not speaking the language, right? Like I had a lot of anxiety about going somewhere where I don't know what people are saying. How do I communicate? And, you know, I got to Thailand, for example. There's a lot of tourists coming through Thailand. Anyone that's in the tourism industry is probably going to speak at least a little bit of English and I'll be able to get by. There's always Google Translate on my phone when I'm places. You know, I've been down in Medellin, Colombia for the last few weeks, and I'm in Kansas right now for Christmas, but I'm going back there next week or so. And I'm working on my Spanish, but it's not fantastic. And so, you know, I can always fall back on something like Google Translate, where I speak into my phone and then it communicates what I'm going for. But I try to learn at least, you know, pleasantries, hello, goodbye, thank you, you're welcome, please, things like that when I go to new countries. Nice. Yeah. But yeah, and in terms of, you know, safety, everything like that, I just take, you know, normal precautions, the same precautions I would take in any American city. You know, if I'm walking by myself at night, I don't have headphones in, I'm aware of my surroundings. And I'm also, this is kind of an interesting one. Whenever I go to a new place, I always Google that place and then scams. So, yeah, like Bali scams, just so I know, like whatever usually it's like taxi or Uber scams, just so I'm aware of it. When I get down there, so I'm not going to fall for the basic ones. Yeah. But again, like it really hasn't been an issue in the last 7 years.
Yeah. That's a great idea too. And good tip. So a little compare and contrast here. You mentioned something about when you first started doing this, you were very fearful and scared. Obviously you overcame that. That's very similar to, I think, a lot of artists. And you even mentioned this in the beginning too. You were afraid to put some of your stuff out there. You had imposter syndrome and that. What are some of the tips that you could take from overcoming your fears to go doing and traveling like this? And did that have any influence on you putting your work out there as well? Because I think some of the things that you would overcome with would be the same.
Yeah, honestly, that's a great question, Jules. And so many of those things kind of go in tandem. That anxiety I had and fear I had about showing my artwork to the world. Like, you know, I mentioned, or I kind of glossed over it, but I mentioned like, oh, I snapped photos of my watercolors and uploaded them to Instagram. That was terrifying. I was so afraid of other people judging me for putting up this watercolor painting of, you know, donuts or sunflowers or whatever it was, because I had this identity as a designer. And it's like, my name is Kat Coquelette and I'm a designer at an agency. And I thought that putting up, you know, these little whimsical watercolors, I just didn't want to be judged for it. It's like, what's she doing? Does she think she's an artist? And I just, it was all of these doubts that nobody was labeling me. It was just, I was self-labeling myself with those doubts. And right. So my best advice for anyone, and the same goes for travel, right? Like I remember the whole week before my trip, that first 6-week trip that I had booked to Southeast Asia, the whole week before that trip kicked off, I could barely sleep at night. I had severe insomnia because I just kept going through in my head all the disasters, like all of the things that could go wrong. Like, what if I forget my passport? What if I get robbed? Like, what if I get somewhere and I have an allergic reaction to some food? Like, I mean, I was just pulling things out of the air thinking like, what's the worst thing that could happen? Okay, let me dwell on that. So to treat both of those things, the kind of the imposter syndrome I had about sharing my work and getting involved with art licensing, and the fears I had about travel, it was really baby steps. So, you know, for Instagram, right, when I was sharing my artwork, I started just by sharing a painting that I felt really, really confident about. And then I started posting more and more frequently. And every time I posted a new picture of my artwork, I got more and more comfortable sharing. And so now it's like, even if I paint something and I'm like, oh, it's like 75% good, I'm like, it's good enough. I'll put it in my art licensing portfolio. Maybe somebody will pick it up. I'll share it online. And, you know, we're always our own worst critics there. And it's the same thing for travel, you know? For travel, it's like, okay, I'll do little baby steps at first. I'll get more and more comfortable. And I did a lot of like group excursions. I was meeting a lot of friends when I got to Thailand. I was looking up digital nomads in Chiang Mai. I was joining networking events. I was going to co-working spaces to meet people. So it was just little baby steps to get more and more comfortable with the idea of living abroad. And then I started solo traveling around Europe for the first time. And that was so much easier than Asia was, because at least Europe, it's like, okay, that's a little bit more familiar. I'd been to Europe before. But yeah, it's really just incremental baby steps. And then after you do one thing, you get more comfortable proceeding to the next step. So, you know, when you look at my life now, it's like, oh, I, you know, adventurous and risk-taking and all of that. And I'm really not. I'm very risk averse, but I test the waters first and I get comfortable and I put myself out there in little ways and then grow from there.
Yeah. So I like that advice, you know, just take a little step at a time and then grow on that little step each time. And I think that applies to so many different things.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
So what were some of your baby steps in getting picked up by some of these bigger companies? So you said, you know, you started on Insta and went to Society 6, but then, I mean, a lot of people do that and they're still just, you know,
they don't take that next
little bits
step.
At a time. They haven't gotten the success that you've gotten. So what are some important other steps that you took?
So one thing that I tell my students when it comes to, let's just use Society 6 as an example, because they are probably like the industry leader for artist created designs for a print on demand website. They're huge. They move a lot of products and they have a massive audience. So with them, my metrics for success with Society 6 aren't just my royalties, my sales. So the way that I get paid through Society 6 is if I sell a mug and the mug costs $20, I'll make $2 off of that sale. It's 10% royalties. I believe you can adjust your royalties now, but I keep mine at about 10%. It's pretty industry average for print on demand. So obviously one metric for judging success is how much are you making through that website? But another one that I think a lot of people overlook, but I think it's potentially even more powerful, is a lot of people go to Society 6 and their built-in SEO, which is search engine optimization, is really strong. So if you Google my name and maybe art print or something, a lot of what's going to come up are going to be those Society 6 products. So my online presence really grew because I had so many products so many pieces of art on Society 6, and I utilized those keyword tags. So when you're uploading something, you give it a title And you can also plug in what's called keyword tags. So if I did a painting of a cat, I would type in and the keywords, it would be like cat, cats, kitten, pets, animal, animals, cute, you know, everything that has to do with a cat. And then that way, if someone's searching a term that relates to it, they're going to find my artwork. So this is such a long answer to a simple question, but by having so many of my designs on Society6, my online presence for my artwork really skyrocketed more than it ever would if I just put them on my own website. So some brands found out about my artwork because they found me on Society6. I'm pretty sure that's how it was with Urban Outfitters. It was either Instagram or Society6, but they referenced this print that I had on Society6, and it was hand lettering and it said good vibes. And they had found it on Society6, and a buyer from Urban Outfitters wanted to license it for their stores. And because on Society6, on my bio, I have all my contact information, including my email, it makes it really easy for an individual or a brand to get a hold of me, especially for licensing deals. So I've had several licensing deals come through because of my artwork being on Society6 and being so visible.
Okay. So you mentioned earlier that, you know, with print on demands, you were very lucky to get in with Society6 back in 2014, kind of when they were first getting started with all this print on demand business model. So for an artist nowadays, Society6 is very oversaturated. So would you recommend or think it's a good idea for an artist to kind of like you put a lot of your eggs in that one basket? Would you recommend that somebody do the same thing, just find a print on demand type vendor that they can put their eggs in and, kind of hope for the best, expect the worst, no big deal, find another little thing type of thing? You know, what strategy would you recommend for now?
So Society6 was the first one that I started uploading my designs to. And when it took off, I looked up every other print on demand company with a similar business model, read the contracts to make sure they were non-exclusive. And I uploaded my artwork to about 15 or 20 different print on demand websites.
Whoa.
It was a lot. It was a ton of time. The thing is, they're all free to join. So there's no monetary investment, but there's definitely a time investment. It takes a lot of time.
That took a lot of time right there.
That's a lot of time.
Yeah. I would batch do it. So that sped up the process a little bit. Like if I was uploading, you know, one of my like avocados or something, one of my paintings, I would do it across the board to all of the print on demands, just copy and paste the same keywords. And that sped up the process a little bit. But, you know, out of those 15 or 20, most of them earned me just about nothing. So a few did really, like Society6 did really well. Redbubble did pretty good. Casetify, which I was selling through at the time, did pretty well. But then most of them were just, they were just duds. They didn't really earn me anything. But I'm glad I did that shotgun approach, because I think that's what helps me figure out what print on demand sites are going to be most viable. And so now I'm not uploading through 15 or 20 different print on demands. I've narrowed it down to the few that I know are working really well for me. So, another thing to keep in mind for any artists that are interested in uploading through print on demand sites, every print on demand site has their own audience, right? Those audience can be very broad. But, when it comes down to it, you know, Society6, they sell a lot of like cool, you know, millennial Gen Z kind of designs. Like they have this very like dorm room chic aesthetic. Whereas Redbubble, you know, I sell a lot of stickers through Redbubble that a lot of people are just buying for their lockers or notebooks. So their audience skews a little bit younger. Casetify, which was the cell phone company cell phone case company that I used to sell through. They had a very, their audience was primarily women. So my design skew towards women as well. So they were doing very well on that website. But then you look at, there's so many other print on demand websites and they all have, you know, their very specific audience. There's Threadless, Mixtiles. And so if you ever want to, if you're an artist and you're listening to this and you want to kind of fast forward that process, not start uploading through 20 different print on demand websites like I did, I would recommend doing some research and looking at browsing those websites by their top selling designs and thinking, could my artwork fit in with these top sellers? And if it feels like, okay, it could kind of stand its own in here, maybe that's worth exploring. Threadless, for example, my type of artwork, like whimsical watercolors and cute illustrations on Procreate, it doesn't do as well on Threadless. Threadless is a little bit more like graphic design, things that do really well on apparel. So I know that's not necessarily going to be the print on demand for my specific style of artwork.
Yeah.
So I know you have Skillshare classes, you've got a blog, you've got all of these resources that are fabulous for artists. Do any of those resources happen to have like a list of ones that you've tried and or that you would, you know, recommend for artists?
Yeah, I'll send it to you to add in the show notes. I have a blog post that's all about optimizing for print on demand and how to get involved. I'm going to make a little note of that right now.
Send blog posts. Love the resources.
Yeah, of course.
So you have classes on Skillshare. Do you have any classes that are new for next year that we need to be looking out for?
I do. So I'm editing it right now. I just finished filming it in Thailand a couple of weeks ago. So my brand new class is, it's called Draw Animal Silhouettes in Procreate with Floral Embellishments. So I'm working on making that class name a little bit less wordy, but you get the idea of what the class is. Yeah, so it's basically showing, you know, I mentioned a few times how animals were something that I had a lot of hesitation with drawing because I wanted them to look right and not look weird. And so one thing that I've really implemented a lot, especially in Procreate, is using reference photos to help me get proportions right on things, especially like animals. So in that class, I show where I find reference photos that are royalty-free, copyright-free, collage reference photos together to create a very unique illustration, and then literally can trace over that and then build my entire illustration off of something like these collaged reference photos together. And so, yeah, that's what I'm working on right now. And my published date for that is the first week of January. So I'll have it available as an individual class, which you can purchase from me individually, or if you have a Skillshare membership, you can watch it through Skillshare as well.
So awesome. What's the most popular class that you have on Skillshare right now?
Probably
or your favorite. We can switch it around, or your favorite.
I think my most popular is my Procreate for Beginners class. And if you're listening to this and you're like, why does she keep mentioning Procreate? I know it's a weird app name, but it's a drawing app on your iPad and it's really intuitive to use. Especially if you have a stylus, like an Apple Pencil. I just got into using Procreate a couple of years ago and it's now a huge chunk of my licensing portfolio. The designs that I've created in Procreate are sold in, Anthropology, Target, Urban Outfitters. They've really gained a lot of traction. So it's becoming more and more popular for other artists to learn Procreate. It's like having an entire art studio right on your iPad. There's been a lot of interest in learning Procreate from my students. So that class has definitely been incredibly popular.
Awesome. Well, we appreciate the time that you
Julie, you look like you have a question or a statement.
No. I'm good. I was just surprised that you said the Procreate class, just because I was thinking was it Shrooms and Blooms or something?
Oh, yeah. Okay. So my most popular class of last year, it was actually the sixth most popular class on all of Skillshare for 2022. And it's called Blooms and Shrooms, Draw Fun and Funky Art in Procreate. And it's really, you know, it's a little cheeky, but it's also leveraging how on trend mushrooms and florals have been, especially this last year. I mean, you walk into Target and look at the, you know, the stationery and journals. I mean, at least a few of them are going to have mushroom motifs on them. It's just been a really, really popular trend. And so I taught a class using Procreate on how to draw mushrooms and flower illustrations and, you know, add kind of that like funky retro twist to them, and how to consider on-trend color palettes and arranging a motif that's going to sell well. And yeah, that was the winner of 2022 for my classes, for sure. It got a lot of traction. Wow. Yeah, it's a good one.
Yeah, I think I just became a Skillshare user actually Thanksgiving weekend because it came on sale. And I do remember seeing that Blooms and Shrooms. I was like, oh, that's a neat name, but I didn't put together who was actually doing it.
Cute. It's funny. I was in Lisbon, Portugal at the time. I just made it over the summer and I was talking with my boyfriend and I was like, I just want to make a really fun Procreate class that's not super technical. I just do something like really cool, like mushrooms or flowers. And he's a stand-up comedian. He's really punny. And he was like, so Blooms and Shrooms. And I was like, well, now I have to make the class because that name is just amazing.
Love that.
That's so funny. I know. It's such a great name.
And do you have any classes on Skillshare or outside of Skillshare that about your art licensing?
Yeah, I have a couple art licensing classes, and I'll send you the links so you can add them to your show notes. I've got some art licensing classes. I have some classes on how to leverage social media, especially for creatives, to gain traction. And then I have a lot of classes on just creative skills. Watercolor was the bread and butter of my business for many years. I still paint with watercolor. And so I have a lot of watercolor classes, not teaching traditional watercolor skills, but teaching on how to paint with modern watercolors. So it's these, you know, very modern styles of painting with watercolors that get picked up a lot for licensing. So I teach mm-hmm. that as well. So within all of my classes, kind of the backbone throughout is I pepper in a lot of tips for this is how you create artwork that's going to be selling well. This is a good tip for licensing. This is something that these are color palettes that licensors our brands really like to see right now. So all of my classes, it's like, oh, we'll paint, you know, a beautiful sunflower in watercolor. But then as we're painting, you're just going to get a lot of tips throughout the process.
That's amazing. So we can put a link to that because I pulled it up and you are one of the top teachers
right.
in Skillshare. So we'll be following you and taking some of your classes probably over the holiday.
That'd be wonderful. Thank you.
I swear I'll stop. I know next year that I Googled the Pantone color of the year for next year, 2023, is magenta. I think it's Mavi magenta or something.
Viva magenta.
Viva magenta. So are you guys already planning to assault that color and bring it in? Because I love that color.
Oh man, Stephanie, I do the lazy approach. I go back through all of my old artwork and I find artwork that all I can do is make a simple color change and change it to Viva Magenta. I'll literally just pull up that so swatch mean. In Photoshop.
I am slow clapping for you over here. Oh, yeah. Like, yes, girl. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Work smarter, not harder for sure.
There you go. Yeah. Perfect.
That is awesome. Good job.
Thank you.
Okay, I'll stop.
Okay, well, I'll just give the ending. I just wanted to say thank you so much, Kat. It's been eye-opening. I took a ton of notes. I have all your stuff up. I've been tabbing over to what you've been talking about. So if you haven't already, please go follow Kat Collette, and we'll have all the show notes, but look her up because she's on Google. She's everywhere. Follow her blog. Follow her on Instagram. Follow her on Skillshare. This girl knows what she's talking about, and she has an amazing time doing it. So good for you. I love that you have found your place and your purpose, and you're doing it and you're loving what you're doing. So you're not really working, are you, if you're doing what you love?
That's true. Thank you, Rachel. That was really sweet of you.
Yeah, and I love that you can tell, like, Julie has told us so much about you, and it's also true, the light and joy, not only in your art, but in you. You can see it and feel it. So thank you so Stephanie. Much for helping all the artists out there. This is amazing.
Oh, yeah, it's my pleasure. Thank you for inviting me on your podcast. When Julie sent me the message about it, I was like, yes, I definitely want to do that. That sounds great. So I've been going through listening to past episodes. I love what you put together. I think it's really inspirational for other artists out there.
Well, thank you.
Thanks for listening to Artists Soar,
podcast for artists by artists. And if you have any questions, feel free to email us at hello@artistsoar.com.
And be sure to leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts so that you can get more of us and we can bring in some sponsors to help you and help us.